The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. K-A-L-S-H-I. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, Bill Kristol here. Welcome to Bulwark Takes. Very pleased to be joined by David Pressman, a lawyer and human rights activist, diplomat. Most importantly for us, our ambassador to Hungary from mid-2022, I think, to the end of the Biden administration, January 2025. Really a terrific ambassador. I've seen a lot of them over the years. Really spoke up for American interests and values, but also for the dissidents and for freedom and for democracy in Hungary itself. You got in some quarrels with Orban and the Orban administration, in which you handled yourself with dignity, but also didn't back down at all. So that was great. You know, I've talked about, I'll just say this and then we'll talk about what happened, but I've talked to a fair number of Hungarian dissidents and opposition figures who've come through Washington in the last few years, and also elsewhere in Europe in 2023 and 24. And they've all expressed admiration for you, but also a gratitude for the fact that you kept the flag flying there during pretty difficult years, I guess, for the Hungarian democratic opposition. I mean, they had lost that election in 2022 before you got there, I think, right? And they were sort of feeling like they might never be able to defeat Orban, right? And he was tightening control. And so they were grateful for what you did. And so am I. So thank you for joining me today. Congratulations.
Well, thank you so much, Bill. Coming from you, that means an enormous amount. So I appreciate that.
Well, I think it's well-deserved. So let's talk two topics. I thought, what happened really in Hungary? You have such a granular and deep understanding of the country and of the politics there, and who was doing what, and what did we watching it from over here miss? And then secondly, let's talk a little bit about lessons for America, because you've also spoken about that and written about that since you came back. But you were there. How surprised were you? What were their key turning points, moments that this became more likely than not? What would you call our attention to?
There's a lot to discuss, and there are aspects of it that are surprising, and there are aspects of it that are not surprising at all. One of the things that Peter Magyar did in his campaign was he took his campaign directly to the rural heartland of Hungary. The constituencies and communities that had been described to me, certainly coming in as U.S. ambassador, as Orban or Orban's party Fidesz strongholds. And Magyar went to those strongholds and he delivered a message and opened a conversation with conservative Hungarians that was about kleptocracy and corruption. I mean, this is one thing I think that's missing a little bit from the Western understanding of what's happening. There's a couple of things, but one of which is Magyar was not engaging in a policy debate with Viktor Orban or Viktor Orban's party. This was not about, and even to the point of, are we European or are we not European? That was sort of the framing of the old opposition. That wasn't Magyar's campaign framing. His framing was, Viktor Orban and Fidesz are a criminal organization, and we need to dismantle this criminal organization. And he connected the impact of the criminal organization to these rural Hungarians' experience. So when you go to the countryside in Hungary and you realize these are smart, sophisticated people, and they can't go to a hospital that's up to, you know, the 20th century. They can't go find public schools that can properly educate their children. And they're watching as you know, these old Hungarian grandmothers I sometimes talk about are describing to me, you know, their grandchildren moving out of Hungary and leaving to try to find opportunity. What Magyar did is he explained to them that the reason your hospitals and your schools are crumbling is because these guys are stealing from you. And I think that was hugely impactful. And I'll just say the you know, one of the things that I always expected, because I viewed my job as U.S. ambassador as to advance U.S. values and interests. And so much of that I needed to do in the countryside in the very same communities that Peter Magyar led this campaign. And I always waited, Bill, to like show up in one of these villages of 60 people and have people be very angry and hostile with me. And you want to know what? It never happened. Hmm. Never. They were keen to engage in conversation. They hadn't seen a government official, albeit a foreign government official, ever. And you could hear in their questions of me, the government propaganda sort of infusing their question, you know, why is the United States profiteering on the war in Ukraine? Why do you want to import gender ideology into Hungary? Whatever it is. But they actually wanted to know the answers. And so there's, you know, am I surprised? I'm surprised that Magyar was able to penetrate this pervasive media control that Viktor Orban has over Hungary. But I'm not surprised at all that the Hungarian people were prepared to choose a different path.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Yeah, let's come back to the lesson maybe about making kleptocracy and corruption and the real world effects of kleptocracy and corruption central to the campaign when we talk about the U.S. But I mean, I'm struck how some of the coverage here is, you know, he stayed away from the culture war issues. He stayed away from democracy as a kind of, you know, big picture issue. Is pretty concrete in what he talked about. But I was talking with David Baer, who wrote about Hungary for us from Budapest this last week, and has been ahead of the curve in seeing that there could really be a huge upset here over the last year or two. And he says that's underestimating the degree to which those particular issues he raised were important, but it was against the backdrop of the what does Hungary mean? So, you know, the meaning of the nation almost. And he thinks it was very important. I'm curious what your thoughts of this are, that Magyar he presented himself as speaking for the true Hungary, the true traditions of, yes, of the great traditions of Hungary. David called it for us, in writing for us, liberal patriotism, that it was, he combined the liberalism with the patriotism and didn't let Orban be the patriotic candidate against the, you know, whatever, the kind of rootless cosmopolitans or something like that. Is that correct, do you think?
And 100%. I might frame it slightly differently, but I think that's absolutely correct. And I think that even if you look at the symbols that Magyar used throughout his campaign, it was about reclaiming the Hungarian flag and reclaiming that Hungarian identity was about something more than being opposed to Brussels and being opposed to George Soros and being opposed to these sort of marauding outside forces that Viktor Orban invested so much time and so much capital and so much attention into stirring up and sort of projecting into everyone's daily life through billboards and television stations and radio stations. And so Magyar, I think, did independent of saying democracy or not democracy or NATO or he did use the idea of outside influence, though. You know, I mean, he did point to the absurdities of Orban's relationship with Putin and this idea that the malign influence that's actually being exercised in Hungary may not be George Soros and David Pressman and Ursula von der Leyen and Volodymyr Zelensky, but maybe Vladimir Putin. And I think that it wasn't a policy debate in the campaign in the sense that I don't think Hungarians went to the poll to reject Vladimir Putin. But what Magyar did is he connected the relationship between Vladimir Putin and Viktor Orban as one vector of mass corruption in Hungary. And that, you know, people could see and feel when they went to their schools and went to their hospitals. And so, you know, I will say, like you began this conversation with, was it a surprise? And I remember, because I was ambassador at the time when Peter Magyar emerged on the public stage for the very first time. And I obviously have relationships across the board with basically every Hungarian political actor. And, you know, the most savvy observers on both sides, in Fidesz and in the opposition, they did not think that this guy could manifest movement And even when he began to produce crowds in Budapest, they thought, oh, sure, but once he goes to the countryside, no one will show up. And then he showed up in the countryside and there was a crowd of people. That was a one-off. That's not going to work. And it just kept going until it became an, sort of inevitable that he was the face of the opposition. And also, I will just say, and maybe this is jumping ahead, Bill, to your second point, but in terms of lessons learned, I've heard a lot of discussion in the Western press about this and speaking about the broad coalition that he brought together and all of this, which is absolutely true. But also, this is about leadership. I mean, Peter Madjar was able to do something that all of the previous leaders of the opposition were not. And we should talk about how and what he brought to the table to be able to do this. But it's not just the ability to assemble a coalition. It was also not being afraid. And he was not afraid.
Vortex is sponsored by Delete Me. Delete Me makes it easy, quick, and safe to remove your personal data online at a time when surveillance and data breaches are common enough to make everyone vulnerable. This is something people with public profiles should think about, including me. But everyone should be safeguarding their personal information because it's kind of weird for people to just be able to Google your address. Very weird. It's easier than ever to find personal information about people online, and having your address, phone number, and family members' names just hanging out there on the internet can have actual consequences in the real world, and it can make everyone vulnerable. More and more online partisans and nefarious actors will find this data and use it to target their political rivals, civil servants, and even outspoken citizens just posting their opinions online. We are in weird, scary times. With Delete Me, you can protect your personal privacy or the privacy of your business from doxing attacks before sensitive information can be exploited. New York Times Wirecutter has named Delete Me their top pick for data removal services. Take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. Now at a special discount to our listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/takes. Use the promo code TAKES at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is go to joindeleteme.com/takes and enter code TAKES at the checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/takes, code TAKES.
Oh, that's so interesting. Well, let's talk about that because it is, and it's relevant to our situation. I mean, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about he's obviously deft politically, and maybe it helped him that he had been in Fidesz and didn't look like a Budapest liberal, you know, running against Orban, which I guess was somewhat true of the preceding races where Orban had won. But I think, I have the sense that's too simple-minded. It wasn't just that, you know, they figured out, oh, hey, we nominate someone who has a more of a conservative background, so to speak, and that's going to magically flip this huge percent, an awful lot of votes if you compare the election in 2022 to 2026. People in the coalition deserve some credit, I suppose, for all being willing to unite behind him, including people who probably had some, you know, justified resentment that, gee, we've been fighting Orban for 10 years, and where was this guy,
sure.
You know? I mean, it'd be like here, right, with Liz Cheney or something. It'd be like if Mike Pence had become the Democratic nominee, I feel like, in 2024, 2028. It's like, you know, we're not quite, but I mean, you know what I mean, or something like that. But talk a little bit about both the leadership at that level of people being willing to put personal preferences aside, in a sense, and histories aside and unite, but also about, how did he turn it into a real movement? And what were the keys to his leadership?
Great question. I mean, I think I put less weight on the fact that he was a conservative who was an insider than I don't think that that's what made Peter Madjar emerge. The only piece of that that I think was relevant, at least initially in his campaign, which is how he exploded on the political scene, was that he purported to have insider knowledge about the corrupt schemes. So his very first moments on the political stage was he goes to a YouTube broadcast called Partisan, and he sits down for this long interview with this incredible remaining independent journalist named Martin Guyash. And he says, I have all of the deeds on what Fidesz has done. And so his insider status was useful in that he was finally, there was an opportunity to see what these guys had been up to. But really it had less, from my view, and others may disagree, that he was a conservative. In fact, I think that made it in some ways harder because it was sort of using your vice president Pence example. There was a lot of skepticism, remains a lot of skepticism and questions. It was the fearlessness, and the fearlessness manifested in the way he communicated. So I remember this moment while I was ambassador. He emerges onto the scene and they start going after him. The Fidesz party, but remember, the Fidesz party is controlling all of the instruments of state. So when the party goes after you, it's a government going after you. And at one point, this was early on, they start making fun of him because he was wearing what they called women's sunglasses. Just a small example. And his response to that was not to deliver sort of a lecture on gender norms or to say, how dare you do this? He started broadcasting and projecting as many images as he could of him in these sunglasses, smiling, having fun, more sunglasses. Then he auctioned the sunglasses off, did a public auction, which created a whole story, raised all this money to deliver to women's charities. And through it all, appeared to be having a good time. And so, you know, there was a brashness to his communications that felt strong. And I think one of the things when we think about how you confront strongmen is it requires a kind of engagement that's not something that we're really accustomed to in politics and certainly in diplomacy. I mean, Bill, you said nice things about my tenure. There's a lot of people who say very negative things about my tenure because they describe me as undiplomatic. But in fact, in an environment like that, if you want to be heard, you need to speak in a way that people will listen and that will get through in an environment that's controlled. And Peter Magyar understood that. Remember, this guy, until it's actually last night, he put out a statement that it's going to be his first time on Hungarian public television a year and a half later. The very first time he's going to be covered by the Hungarian public television, because the Hungarian public television, of course, had been under strict instructions not to cover Peter Magyar. So it's remarkable that he was able to circumvent this and connect with people. So the way he communicated, and then two, I think this rural outreach in community building. I mean, he Fidesz and Viktor Orban is, Orban, whatever you think about him, he's an extraordinary politician and he is extremely savvy. And he built an operation that knew how to build community. I mean, you would see Fidesz go out and they would like host picnics, Bill, you know, I mean, that they would send their ministers to rural communities to, and they would have picnics. And I would be like, what are they? This is sort of a strange thing for a senior government official to be doing, but it was like embedded in what the party does. And Magyar replicated that with a similar relentlessness of engagement with communities that had been written off by the previous opposition. And I think the combination of those things overlaid with not engaging in policy debates and just talking about kleptocracy is how Hungarians galvanized behind a candidate who wasn't proposing policy change, but was proposing system change.
No, that's so interesting. Yeah, the system change is a good way of putting it. Was he, I should know this, but was he well known at all before he emerged onto the scene in, what was it, 2022 or so, or 2023? Was he a prominent figure?
No, not at all. He was the spouse of the justice minister, who was a very prominent figure. Judit Varga was her name. And both Minister Varga and the then president of Hungary, Katalin Novak, were forced to resign as a result of a pedophilia scandal. So there's this major scandal in which the government, in which the president of Hungary pardoned a pedophile. It's a huge story. Gout started this whole movement. And this is the party that holds itself out as protecting children in sort of the imaginary abstract sense. But in the real sense, it comes out that they're actually protecting pedophiles. And Viktor Orban responded to this moment where people were taking to the streets outraged. It was a version almost of their Epstein scandal, candidly. Mm. And Viktor Orban responded to it by firing the president and firing the justice minister being Peter Magyar's wife. And Peter Magyar's first statements on the public stage were, Viktor Orban, you can't hide behind these two female officials. And that's the first time that he actually had a public voice. And the story goes on from there.
Yeah, so it's so interesting. If you think of the American analogy, I suppose it would be, it's not worth getting into the details, but I mean, the fact that he wasn't known much 3 or 4 years ago and then, you know, wins this massive victory It's really something, isn't it? I mean, is it now? Let's ask a question about the media, which you alluded to. But so Orban really controls the media, not like here, where we can deplore Elon Musk and X, or you know, maybe what's happening with some, you know, some of these, the Washington Post or CBS News. But we're it's a whole different level, obviously, in Hungary. How did he get through to people, though? I mean, was it the independent? There were independent journalists still, and using websites online. I mean, is there anything to be learned from that?
I think there's something to be learned from it in that, and it goes to my point about how he communicated differently, is that what he said became so newsworthy and it's not dissimilar to what I tried to do. It became so interesting or different that even the government controlled media had to cover it. So there had to, because people were talking about it. And so this women's sunglasses thing became a thing, even though it was too unusual to not report on. And so, but his communications was largely rooted in, you know, online mobilization and rallies. And, you know, the Hungarian opposition parties, they fought for a long time, and they obviously were unsuccessful in unseating Viktor Orban. And I think that there's a lot of resentment that they feel towards Peter Madjar, understandably, because one of the things that he did that also allowed him to succeed, and I should have mentioned this, is he completely rejected them and all of their infrastructure. So if you had ever been associated with a previous opposition party in an official or formal capacity, you could have no involvement in Peter Madjar's Kisa. Now, some interpreted that as being, oh, he's a conservative, a right winger. He doesn't want to be involved with these lefties. I'm not so sure. Like, I think he actually believed that if he was going to propose a change of system, that he needed a entirely new, entirely independent infrastructure. And mind you, when he was doing that, and I heard from the leadership of all of the opposition parties, he won't be able to succeed. How do you build an entirely new party? How do you do this? No one believed he could do it. And in fact, he did. I think there are lessons to be taken from that in terms of ambition. In terms of how we communicate, certainly the United States is not comparable to Hungary, but he was still able to communicate in a Hungarian system. But really, like, the most important part is that he wasn't afraid, and he demonstrated to people how not to be afraid. Madjar at his press conference yesterday said something that I thought I really related with, and I thought he was right. He began his press conference, and it was a big press conference. He said, usually at these press conferences, the prime minister will only recognize government media. I'm going to recognize any of you. I'll stay here as long as you want, and I'll answer all of your questions. But I want to say something to the foreign correspondents in the room, he said. The propaganda apparatus in Hungary, he said, was like North Korea. I don't think you understand how bad it was. And I think he's right. I think that most Americans and most Westerners don't appreciate just the sheer power that having just all of these platforms of communication badmouth you, smear you, spy on you, like what that does to individuals. But Madjar, to his credit, he didn't shirk and plowed through it in a really impressive way.
And he really seems to have created a social movement more than a new party or a, you know, right? I mean, as you say, the rallies, the leadership, the courage. I guess the question is, governing, you do have to do more practical things, maybe, but I guess we'll see how that goes. Anything for us to be watching for there in the short term, medium term, or anything?
Oh, it's going to be.
How does he disassemble everything? I mean, how does he deal with, you know?
I mean, this is going to be an extremely hard test because, and this is something I think we need to watch for in other democracies that are confronting illiberal leaders, where you begin to see what are formerly government institutions or even quasi-government institutions be co-opted and handed off to political allies and cronies. Like, this happened on steroids in Hungary over 16 years. And so Madjar is inheriting a system that, even though he's the prime minister and even though he has a supermajority of parliament such that he can amend the constitution, many of the institutions that were traditionally state institutions, including the educational system, including some of the cultural systems, including the media, have been privatized. So they've been privatized in the sense that they're controlled by loyalists to Viktor Orban, and they'll continue to be. And so, you know, one example I'll give you is the prime minister's political director is also, at the same time as being the political director to the prime minister, he also runs a sort of bogus university that doesn't grant degrees, but it's called Matthias Corvinus Collegium. And really what they do is they sort of train culture warriors. I mean, that's the heart of what they do. I'm sure they'll be very, they won't be surprised that I said this, but they'll disagree with it. But that's what it, but it's funded by $1 billion of shares of the state oil company of Hungary's deals with the Russian Federation. And so this state money, this resource that should be going to public good, is going to this sort of sham political operation that's run by and will continue to be run by Viktor Orban's political director. So how you sort of untangle all of this is going to be a real challenge. But I'll tell you, Bill, when I heard Peter Magyar the night of his election begin to list all of the people who needed to step down from their positions, it seems to me that he's pretty clear-eyed about the challenge ahead.
Well, Lee, I'm just curious about this from a foreign policy point of view. On the one hand, there's people who will have an interest in making it difficult for Magyar to succeed, to say the least, to Putin being one of them, I take it. The EU, do you think they, I mean, unfortunately, if you were still ambassador and if there were a different U.S. government, we would be helping the newly pro-liberal democracy government in Hungary. I don't think we can expect that much over the next 2.5 years from the, at least from the top of the U.S. government. Maybe some stuff can happen beneath the radar screen. What about the EU? How helpful can they be? Will they be, do you think? I mean, is that a bit of a resource for him?
Oh, for sure. I mean, even seeing the relationship that's starting to develop between Warsaw and Budapest, I mean, you have a collection of European Union member states who are so eager to work with Hungary. And mind you, Peter Magyar is not going to agree with every policy that the European Union and his European Union colleagues are advancing. And that's not the point. But what I think he will do, which is very different than Viktor Orban, and by the way, the same analysis holds true for the NATO alliance, is he'll cease using Hungary's position in these consensus-based organizations to instrumentalize his ability to veto things in order to secure really parochial, often financial interests just for him, his party, or even Hungary. I mean, he will be a participant and believe in a united European Union and a united alliance. And at a time where we're confronting the threats that we're confronting, that's super important. So I think, you know, this is without question a big setback for those who wish to divide our alliance and for those who wish to divide the European Union. And of course, Vladimir Putin is top on that list.
No, that's so interesting. Just a few minutes. I know you've got a very tight schedule. Let's talk about the American side of it. I take it you think that, well, do you think that the kleptocracy, corruption set of issues, especially when connected to, you know, real world implications for people, will be powerful here over the next, in dealing with the Trump administration?
I think so. I mean, I think, Bill, that one of the things that we have not transitioned to in the United States in terms of how we're viewing what's happening is we continue to see sort of what's happening as instances of corruption. And at a certain point, we need to transition that perspective that it's not, these are not aberrations from the system of government. This is the new system of government. Right. And in that respect, I think we can learn a lot from Peter Magyar, because Peter Magyar wasn't calling out individual abuses. He was calling out an entire platform that was designed to enrich a kleptocratic elite in a family of Viktor Orban. And so there are haunting parallels, I think, to our current domestic situation. I am concerned a little bit that as we look at this situation as Americans that we're confronting, we keep seeing some outrageous and unprecedented, and in my view, illegal acts taking place, but we continue to view them as individual derogations from practice, as opposed to a new system that has actually been in place that needs to be challenged systemically.
No, that's so well said. And I think I hope people, I'm sure you're talking to a lot of people, but you need to really make this point. I'm on a listserv and some Zooms with a lot of very good, mostly lawyers, like liberal lawyers. And they're wonderful people. They're fighting the good fight in a million ways, you know, in courts and in litigation and other ways for human rights and for liberty and democracy in the U.S. But they do still, they can't help themselves, and I do this myself some too, slipping into the kind of, can you believe the Justice Department, these are people who've been in the Justice Department for 20 years, right, have been assistant, U.S. attorneys, or been, you know, senior people in the U.S. government. And they, can you believe that they're doing this now? And don't they understand this? And I do sometimes just intervene and say, we need to stop saying, can you believe? I mean, this is what, they know what they're doing. It's not that they don't understand what the ethics rule, the traditional role of parts of the Justice Department have been, or the firewall between the White House and the Justice Department, or, you know, the whole, they know all of that. They want to change that, and they have changed it to a remarkable degree in, what, 15 months. I mean, they just run roughshod over stuff that, I mean, when you were in government, when I was in government so many years before, you know, you're just careful about letting someone buy you dinner if it costs more than $50 or whatever the rules were. I can't even remember. And we're so unbelievably far beyond that. And so, yeah, I do think this still requires a little wrenching on the part of the Democratic small D opposition here to understand that, well, I like your formulation, that we need a change of system, not just a change of policies.
Which is a scary thing and a very, I think, unprecedented thing for Americans to consider. And I'll say one other note as we close out here, but just as I watch what's happening in Hungary, and I'm watching now those insiders, or even not the insiders, but those who are adjacent and facilitating the corruption and the kleptocracy in Hungary over these years and profiting from it. They feel very uncomfortable in this moment. And I think that as we think about our roles as individuals, as institutions, as businesses, as Americans, as we confront an unprecedented moment in America, when you look at Hungary, you realize that these moments will end. And when they end, you want to be standing with the principles and values that have animated, in my view, the United States of America, but also the principles and values that you're comfortable with. And I think that there are a lot of people who are pretty uncomfortable at the moment in Hungary, because as Magyar has pledged, there's going to be a time for transparency and a time for accountability.
Yeah, it is a big challenge, though. I've thought about this a lot in the U.S. context, in terms of, you take over in January 2029 and you're the Attorney General, what do you do with the Justice Department? I mean, you can't fire everyone, but, you know, you can't really ignore what's happened. You turn over the rocks and you find things. You don't want to look like you're prosecuting cases from 3 years ago for the first, you're spending your first year in office doing that. On the other hand, you can't turn a blind eye to, I mean, it's a very tough set of choices, I think.
Indeed.
Yeah. But that's a bridge that can be crossed once you get rid of the immediate authoritarian threat. And in that respect, I do think, don't you think, that one reason what's happened in Hungary is so important is that it takes away the inevitability sense of this, that they're on the ascendancy, liberalism is old and tired, illiberalism's got the wind in its back. And I do think that's really, other things have also contributed to, like, Trump's decline of popularity here, obviously, and the elections here, special elections and the off-year elections have contributed to denting that. But I think Hungary, maybe more than anything else, has really helped puncture that sense, which is a very tough sense politically. You know, if you just think you're running uphill all the time, it's just hard to keep on running, you know?
I really agree with that. And did it by saying all of this talk that you've offered about civilizational struggle and these outside forces that are coming to invade us. And ultimately, we no longer believe you. We no longer believe that that's what you're doing. We want you to be focused on us, on Hungary, on our sovereignty as a country, not on your political popularity with the far right movement globally. And I think that's a powerful judgment. And obviously, that judgment has resulted in a historic election in Hungary.
Amazing. David, thank you for what you did, actually, as ambassador, what you continue to do in terms of a lot of your activities here in the U.S. and abroad, and for joining us today. Really a fascinating conversation. We'll have to resume it sooner rather than later.
Bill, thank you so much for that, and thanks for the kind words. Appreciate it. It's great to see you.
Great to see you.
The World Cup Championship will be crowned this week, and you can trade the tourney through the finals on Kalshi, America's number one prediction market platform. Right now, Spain is trading at 58% to beat Argentina, meaning 100 trade pays out 166 if they win. On Kalshi, you're trading against other people in a live market. No house, no odds makers. For a limited time, download the Kalshi app and use code DEFEND to get $10 when you trade $10. Kalshi. Kalshi. Trade the beautiful game. 18 plus only. Restrictions and eligibility requirements apply. Event contract trading involves risk and may not be suitable for all investors. Kalshi products are not available in all jurisdictions. Prices, values, and available markets may differ from those mentioned. For more information, see kalshi.com/regulatory.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.